I'd say the number one most profitable thing you could do is to make sure that you provide a product in a high-demand, low-supply time period. That has nothing to do with what I've been talking about the rest of the day. But to give you an example of that, if you can sell a 7-weight steer before the 15th of October in Missouri, you are practically bulletproof. Because guess what? There aren't very many of them. Most everybody calves in February and March. Most everybody weans in October. I'm telling you that if you really want an honest answer, the number one thing you can do is to make sure you offer a product that is in high demand in a low supply period. Secondly, keep excellent records. Can't fix what you can't measure. And thirdly, find a guy that's my age or older that's been in the business all of his life and get some help. That's as straightforward as I can be on that, at least in our part of the world. If you're in the cow-calf business, there are some things that are more important or more valuable in today's market than any of the other things we've talked about.
Taking that timing part, which I think is critical, because if you're going to add value, and we're going to get to some things in terms of choice select spreads and that here in a second, is the short time we have left. But, Mike, you're from an area where you have, proportionately, I'm sure you know the numbers, but it may be half fall calving, half spring calving, in terms of the timing. Comment a little bit further on the timing, calving timing, and when these calves hit the market in terms of whether they're as calves, whether they're as feeder cattle or even fed cattle. The timing thing is dang important. You alluded to it.
Oh, my. I calve in the fall right now, which is not normal in northern Missouri. And I would say that, and I can see Mark Harmon sit back there, he might have a different opinion. He lives in south Missouri, but the percentage, I'd say it's still pretty close to 80-20. And that's taking out the year-rounders. Okay, that's the people that actually have a defined calving season. Okay, so
are some of those?
Oh yeah,
of the couple.
Yeah, so that goes back to the bull question. But
you fall calve because yours make more money than Mark's would. Says spring calvers, right?
In some years.
Okay.
And again, it's just not that simple. I can remember in 1993, I was calving by myself in February in some of the worst weather I have ever experienced in my life. And it wasn't a blizzard. I can live with the cold weather. It was 35 degrees and rain for day after day after day after day. And we'd have 8 or 10 calves in the utility room tubing them and trying to keep them alive. And why did we do that? Why did we go through that process? It was so I could sell a heavier calf in the fall before that flood of 5-weights hit in mid-October. It's a supply and demand process. I mean, that is, again, that's number one, but if you lose 10% of them because they're drowning in mud, I mean, that's not a very simple question, but it's very, very easy to analyze feeder cattle markets and figure out when those times of the year are. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. All you got to do is talk to Randy Block or go to the, we track and have for 7 years something we call the Missouri Weekly Weighted Average, which is feeder cattle sales, and I can show you that trend on any weight range of cattle you want, and I can show you that it troughs in October and November, and it peaks in March and April, and it does it every year, and I don't care what you do, it isn't going to change until more than half of the people change their calving date.
So taking that a step further, which is another question from the audience, right along with that, we see a lot of seasonality in the choice select spread. And then looking at the choice select spread, it's been somewhere in the $5-$6 range lately. Was as $10 last year, $13 the year before. Certainly higher than it's been over the 20-year period, which is probably $4, $5, $6. But how do I take advantage of these cyclic nature of the choice select spread, and maybe whether they're fed cattle or feeder calves kind of going to the market that got a lot of quality to them that seem to fit this seasonality from the standpoint of the quality aspects? I told you the question is going to get easier.
That's a really easy question. You don't. Like I said, we trade trade them by the thousands, and the choice select spread is the farthest thing from anybody's minds, for the most part, when they're buying cattle. Or it basically comes down to, if they've got empty pens, they're buying cattle. If they've got wheat to stock, they're buying cattle. The timing and the seasonality of something is something you have a control in. You have control when you market your calves from the time they hit the ground to the time they die, if you so choose. Like Mike said, the seasonal troughs are easy to track. You can get them from anybody in the country. I've got 25 years of data. If you've got 6-weight wean calves right now or 550-weight wean calves, please call me. People are looking for crash cattle. It's pretty simple. You know, they bring January, February. You don't sell calves if you can get any way around it, August through December. December is the worst time to sell them, starting January 1, week over week. They get higher. They get higher till April the 31st, and then they start on a decline again. You know, one of the things that most of y'all, in our country anyway, most of our guys because in the Southeast are understocked. I'm sure in Missouri most of them are understocked as well. One of the things that going forward, and I held this, had a discussion in Corpus Christi the other day with a bunch of the big guys down in that country, is you can make calves into yearlings. You know, normally when you would market them in August, September, October, and if you're understocked, that means more than likely you've got some sort of winter grass to utilize. And pushing your cattle as yearlings or long wean calves into January and February is always a good time to sell them. Nobody's selling. Now, when you get to March, April, May, of course, the big yearlings are normally coming off of wheat if we don't have $10 wheat. So it's just timing's critical. I'll stand by my guns. The choice select spread is narrowed. Primarily for two reasons, and the biggest one here recently is we've had more yearlings go on feed, which means they have more age behind the cattle, which means they graze better. And that's why we've seen that in the short term. We had a wet season across, grass season across, everywhere. We put lots of grass yearlings, 850 weight cattle that had age behind them. Now with the droughts around, you're going to see the choice select spread probably widen out because a lot of calves start dying normally in March, April, and May. That goes to the seasonality. Once again, that's the youth of your type of cattle. With high corn, weights are going to start to drop or have started to drop, so we're feeding them not as long, so it's a maturity issue. Just to answer that question, choice select spread, in my business, most people don't buy cattle considering the choice select spread.
Let's go on another way, Mike. You retain ownership, and I'm sure that you manage towards certain target markets and some things like that. Your thoughts in terms of with the kind of cattle that you handle and produce, you want as much for them as you can. But what seasonality and spreads and that do you keep in mind with the calves that you're handling as well as some that you do for your customers?
Honestly, I wish we had that much foresight. I mean, I would say... Now I got a bone to pick with you. I wish we had that much planning, honestly. There are trends when the choice select spread tends to get higher through the late spring and summer and tighter through the winter. I mean, there are things that are general trends. But I learned my lesson the hard way, which we've been retaining ownership a long time, and single trait selection, as you know, is not a good thing. If you've got cattle that grade 100% choice or better, but they're all yield grade 5s with a 12-inch eye or a 10-inch eye, that's not good either. So, I would contend that the animals that we kill today that have close to 800-pound carcasses that are above 70% choice have moderate ribeyes and a decent yield. They'll work any time of the year, but again, I think you're going to see the choice select spread always start up with the summer drilling season and the marbling tends to get a little tight through the heat of the summer, so there tends to be more spread in that time of the year. Supply and demand, seasonal calves, everything. I mean, it those things all work that way. But I guarantee you that if you have prime animals in 675 weight carcasses or 50% choice animals with 850 pound carcasses, I'll take B instead of A.
Now, one last question. We've got 5 minutes left. There's other sessions going on shortly. The last question we'll take is an audience question, and that is, and it's a great question, obviously you guys have worked at this many different angles. What's the one lesson you've learned that wasn't a real pleasant lesson that you would offer to these folks, that a pitfall that you'd suggest they stay out of? Les, we'll start at you. What have you learned being part of these programs that you'd encourage them to watch for? You got two? I didn't think you'd have two.
Number one is strictly capitalization. I mean, we touched on it earlier. Nobody's really talked about it since. Regardless of who you're dealing with, whether it's a program, whether it's a individual, however you're approaching it, check people's capitalization. Let me tell you, going forward, in the situation we're in this industry right now, there's a lot of people, whether they want to admit it to you or not, that are undercapitalized because they're losing lots of money. And regardless of what you do, if you sell to somebody like me, if you go through a sale barn, if you go through a video auction, it doesn't really matter. Just make sure that you dotted your I's, crossed your T's, and they're capitalized enough to do what they're telling you they're willing to do for you. Because it's going to be a trap, and some people are going to get caught in it. They always do. They get caught. We get caught in it when it's a good market, much less when it's a tough market. So that's the one thing I would tell each and every one of you, is to make sure that whoever you're selling to, their check is good. It comes right down to that.
Bob?
I would say, as a producer standpoint, is don't get to chasing extremes. Stay in the middle. Match your cows to your environment. Match them to your climate. The seasonality thing, I can slide cattle to fit a season a little bit more, but there are seasons that are just very expensive to feed cattle in, and that's November, December, January up here in the Northwest. That's when a lot of people need Christmas kills. They're wanting middle meats, tenderloins, prime ribs. You've got to produce a lot of cattle at that particular time, but it's very expensive to feed those cattle. As far as your choice select spreads, I don't worry about it. I get involved with branded programs that pay the same regardless of whether they're choice or select. There are programs, CHB program is one that you can fit into that. It complements another program very well, CAB. If you send your high choice one way, you can send your high select, low choice with the same premiums involved. So pick your endpoint that you want to go for. Don't get hung up, I don't think, in the seasonality issue, but you know, most of the money, I think, in the profitability side can be made back at the ranch, and that's the important part.
Mike?
I would say don't do nothing. And what I mean by that is this industry is changing incredibly fast. And the definition of idiocy is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. And if you're not... You know, we went everywhere from basic record keeping to identification to source and age verification, VAC 45. I mean, all of those things add value, and they are incremental and they are cumulative, but you have to start somewhere. So my advice to you, we want you to stay in this business. My biggest fear in our part of the world is with land costs what they are, and we got people ripping out fences and planting soybeans and corn and selling cows, and I mean, I'm such an advocate for this industry that I want people to stay in business. Do something. Get involved. Find out. Measure your product. Find out what in your region, and that's not shouldn't be that difficult. Find out what's working, what people are participating in, and how you can band together as producers and meet Leslie's critical mass.
Well, before we show our appreciation to these folks, just a couple points here, another housekeeping thing. What's really helpful to the staff in terms of planning futures is fill out the evaluation forms. Please do that. Pass those to the center. I kind of leave them on the ends of the table on the middle part here. Do also want to thank a couple folks. Valerie Schofield was picking up the questions from you. We appreciate her as a back there in the back of the room as a NCBA intern from Missouri. The other one I know that you thought was probably Vanna White sorting out these questions. Bring them to me. It wasn't Vanna. It was even better. It was Patsy Houghton with Heartland Cattle Company. She is co-chairman of the Education Committee for Cattlemen's College, along with Tom Woodward, and very much appreciate the job they do in putting together the program. So job well done, Patsy. With that, let's show our appreciation to three panels. Excellent job.
This has been a production of Angus Productions Incorporated, the industry's